let anybody tell you this campaign is over. We're going to fight for the last vote we can find in New Jersey and California.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It's 5:09. It's Tuesday, May 10th, 2016. Welcome to another business day. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Lots to talk to you about today. The Police Officers Memorial in Washington, D.C. adds more names this week. We're going to be talking with the director, president, and CEO of the Police Officers Law Enforcement Memorial Fund coming up here on The Opening Bell. But first, your overnight global market intel from the WGN Market Desk. Asian shares meandered in lackluster trading today after an overnight drop in oil prices. But a fresh promise of stimulus in China has helped to counter pessimism over weak trade data from there in April. Chinese cabinet approved measures to boost exports as Beijing struggles to reduce gluts in many industries, reverse an export decline. In oil prices this morning, the benchmark U.S. crude oil fell but remains above $43.25 a barrel. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow edged down about 34 points, the NASDAQ and S&P also saw just a little bit of a pickup in each. The NASDAQ up just 14 points, the S&P up 1.5 points. The Dow's pushing forward as a machinery maker, Illinois-based Caterpillar, energy giant Chevron lost ground yesterday. The dollar gained against the yen and the euro. The economy day ahead today. Major business and economic events on the schedule today. Reports should offer a little bit more insight into business conditions and the job market. The Commerce Department releases wholesale trade inventories for March at about 9 o'clock Chicago time this morning. U.S. wholesale businesses have been reducing stockpiles for five straight months, while sales have dropped for the last four. The numbers reflect sluggish economic growth as U.S. businesses struggle with weak economic news overseas, but a strong dollar. Also this morning, the Labor Department's going to release its job openings and labor turnover survey for March. Hiring jumped to a nine-year high in February, with 5.4 million people finding jobs. More Americans also quit their jobs. Both figures point to a healthier, more dynamic labor market. On the earnings front, the Walt Disney Company is going to report its quarterly financial results after the market closes today. This is a big week for retail. Many retail outlets are reporting earnings this week. The Gap first out of the block yesterday. Disappointing sales. The company says sales fell about 7%. In April, at established stores, total sales declining as well. The San Francisco-based retailer reported that it is looking for ways to be more efficient and improve operations. It's also weighing options for its international Banana Republic and Old Navy stores. It didn't say what those options might be, whether they're going to spin them off or close them down altogether. The results underscore the continuing challenges in the retail sector. We are likely to see more of this as the week goes along, as more companies report their earnings. In Washington, D.C. this week, thousands of law enforcement officers, survivors, and supporters will gather for the National Police Week 2016. They'll also pay special tribute to 252 law enforcement officers the 252 law enforcement officers whose names are going to be engraved on the walls of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. The names include 123 law enforcement officers who were killed in the line of duty during 2015, plus 129 officer fatalities from the previous year. We will, coming up on the show, talk more with the head of this organization as Police Week gets underway. Some other business news that we're working on for you this morning. In Helsinki, hit by a lower demand in mobile networks, Nokia today reported its first quarter net loss of 513 million euros, or about $584 million since it acquired Alcatel-Lucent down from a standalone profit of just 177 million euros a year earlier. Company warns further decline there. Also, the U.S. Justice Department is suing North Carolina over that state's bathroom law. U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch says the law requiring transgender people to use public restrooms and showers corresponding to their gender on their birth certificate amounts to state-sponsored discrimination that inflicts further indignity on a population that's already suffered more than its fair share, according to her, in her words. The suit was filed after Governor Pat McCrory sued the federal government last week. The Justice Department demanded that the governor not enforce what's known as House Bill 2, but McCrory calls it a common-sense privacy policy, and the Justice Department position is, in his words, baseless and blatant overreach. McCrory's Democratic election rival says the governor is pouring gas on a fire that he lit. Also today, California's lower legislative chamber has passed, this was yesterday, has passed a bill to require single-person public restrooms to be gender neutral. The assembly's 52-18 vote yesterday came as North Carolina and the federal government sued each other in that case that we just mentioned there.
From ABC News Wall Street Now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average edged down 35 points on Monday as machinery maker Caterpillar and energy giant Chevron lost ground. The S&P 500 picked up a point and a half. The NASDAQ Composite Index rose 14 to 4750. Nokia has reported a first quarter net loss of $584 million on lower demand in mobile networks. China's cabinet has approved measures to boost exports in a move that might worsen tensions with trading partners that say Beijing is flooding their markets with unfairly low-priced steel and other goods. Beijing is trying to reverse an export decline that threatens to cause job losses in China. The now defunct Ted Cruz presidential campaign is being sued over the background music that it used in two videos. Audio Socket, a music licensing company, says an agreement with Cruz's ad agency expressly barred the use of songs for political purposes. The lawsuit seeks hundreds of thousands of dollars in damages. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 520. Welcome back to The Opening Bell. Have you ever wondered the state incentives that are offered to companies to locate to your community, how important they are, and what weighs on the minds of CEOs when they make those decisions from the opposite sides? We're going to talk about that this morning. Dale Buss is with us. He is the editor, chief executive of Chief Executive Magazine, and on Twitter at Dale D. Buss. Dale, welcome back to The Opening Bell. Good to have you back.
Great. Thanks, Steve.
The incentives that we often hear, we sometimes hear that, you know, Company A has been offered tax breaks or has been offered some sort of package of incentives. We often wonder, you know, from the company's point of view, how they weigh those and how important they are, what decisions are made. What have you found in your reporting?
Well, certainly incentives are important. And what you typically find is that what it comes down to is maybe between one state or another might be financial incentives of some sort. And a lot of states have, you know, what they call deal closing funds, throw a few million dollars at a company just to get them over the line and to close a deal with them and take them from another competing state. But what I found in the reporting for this package for chief executive, best states, worst states for business for 2016, is that there are a couple things that are important, more important to companies than, you know, financial incentives that can be thrown in at the end. Obviously, there's the sort of the endemic properties of a location, the basic location in the middle of the country or on the coast or whatever. There are factors like infrastructure, you know, are the roads and railroads and so on in and out in good shape? Are they where they need to be? Or if you've got a call center, for example, are there enough people around to hire at reasonable wages to staff a call center? And, of course, there are issues like taxes. You know, the differences between a high-tax state like Illinois and a lower-tax state like Indiana can be crucial. Right to work. There's another contrast, say, between Illinois and Indiana or Illinois and Wisconsin. But the most interesting thing that we found for research for this piece was that it's human capital that kind of ends up making the difference these days, especially because every industry is so digitized and the growth engine of the U.S. economy is digital workers. That's why a very high-tech state like Massachusetts and Boston was able to lure the headquarters of General Electric from another high-tech state, Connecticut. It's because of all those digital workers, the millennials, the college students, the young digirati, as I call them, in Boston. That's why General Electric is making that move.
So there are two states that top this list every year and have for quite a while. They are, and why do they keep appearing at the top of this list?
Texas, which has been number one for each of the 12 years, and Florida, which I believe has been number two for all 12 years. Well, Texas has had the attitude for some time that what they want to do is enable CEOs and business leaders to think of them as a great place to do business. So, you know, taxes are low. There's a can-do attitude. Regulatory interference is at a minimum. It's a big state with several major population centers. Diversity, there's a lot of workers available. There's some really good colleges. You know, Austin is a place where startups and intellectual capital is strong. And then there's the attitude of governors. And Rick Perry was governor for a long time. He used to fly out to California just to cherry pick businesses that were frustrated about doing business in California, wanted to move elsewhere. Of course, he was able to get Toyota to commit to moving its headquarters, for example. And Florida has always been nipping at Texas's heels with a lot of the same qualities as that, but maybe not quite the reputation that Texas has. And Texas has done well, even though oil prices have collapsed and, you know, made it harder for the state to provide financial incentives and that sort of thing.
So where does Illinois fall in here, and what lessons can some of these other states learn from the Floridas and Texases of the world?
Well, Illinois, unfortunately, I don't have the rankings right in front of me. It's always among the last five, you know, 45, 48, something like that. Honestly, I think it's always been there for those 12 years. And, you know, Chicagoans and people in Illinois know well what the problems are in the state, and it's something that Governor Rauner is trying to do something about in terms of dealing with these costs like state worker pensions, that sort of thing. It's really hard to pull out of that. I think what any state, even Illinois, can learn, and Illinois, to some extent, is applying this, is that despite some of these huge obstacles like high taxes, as much as you try to work on them, what really is important these days, as I mentioned, is human capital. If you can attract enough of the right people to live and work in your locale, companies are going to be drawn to that. And as the economy continues to transform to something digitally based, practically every industry, that makes it possible for a place like Boston or Chicago to do much better.
Now, are there states that are moving up fast on the leaders here that are kind of catching on to how the Floridas and Texases do things, and they're moving up that you see a fast move up?
Yeah, absolutely. And a couple of them are contiguous to Illinois. Indiana moved up to number five in the chief executive best states, worst states for business rankings this year. It was number six last year, but it's been kind of moving up with a bullet lately. And I think, you know, probably people in Illinois are getting tired of hearing about the great job that Governor Mike Pence is doing over there. But, you know, Indiana's been able to parlay things like the right to work status and the cut in the corporate tax rate by half a percentage point for the fourth straight year. Those kinds of things are attractive to CEOs citing businesses. And in Wisconsin, Wisconsin has climbed pretty smartly over the last several years, thanks to some of the policies that Governor Scott Walker has helped institute, including, of course, the big battle they had with public sector workers, which has enabled the state to keep taxes in line and close its budget deficit. So those two states, for sure, are making Illinois look worse by comparison.
You can read more about the 2016 best and worst states for business. It's Dale Buss on chiefexecutive.net.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to The Opening Bell, 538 in Washington, D.C. This May, thousands of law enforcement officers, survivors, and supporters will gather for National Police Week 2016. They're going to be paying special tribute to 252 law enforcement heroes whose names are being engraved on the walls of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. The full memorial museum is under construction in D.C., and we're happy this morning to have the president, CEO, Craig Floyd, of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund with us on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Craig. Welcome to The Bell.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve.
Good to have you. Let's talk a little bit about the construction. I've seen a photograph this morning of the lot that's under construction. It looks like you guys are well underway there. What is the status, and when do you hope to be done?
Well, we dedicated the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial back in 1991, and it's in a beautiful place called Judiciary Square, downtown Washington, D.C. And on the walls of that memorial are 20,789 names of officers killed in the line of duty. Chicago, unfortunately, has a dubious distinction, the second most deaths that are honored on that wall. New York City is the only one with more. Now, across the street, what you're looking at is a construction site for the National Law Enforcement Museum. This has been in the works now for about 15 years. We're worried that when visitors come to that memorial, they see row after row of names of officers killed, and they realize the enormity of the sacrifice. But they really don't know the inspirational stories behind those names. They don't know the full story, the history of American law enforcement. It's an incredible story, a story that I think will be an awakening for most visitors. They'll realize for the first time, in many cases, the vital role that law enforcement plays in our society. And it's going to be an experiential museum where people walk in the shoes of an officer. They go through the types of training that officers deal with, the shoot, don't shoot training simulator. You learn how to make split-second decisions. It's a tough profession. It's a very important one, and we're so proud to finally be able to tell that story. 2018, that museum will be open.
The number that you mentioned there with Chicago is stark, stands out among our discussion this morning. Why is Chicago so high up on that list?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to the number of officers serving, the number of officers at risk. You never know when that life-threatening moment may occur when you're a law enforcement professional. It could come at any time. Training exercises, traffic stops, bank robberies, you name it, and that officer is at risk. Last year, 48 officers were killed in traffic-related incidents, responding to emergency calls at high rates of speed, putting themselves at great danger, trying to save someone else's life. 41 officers last year shot and killed. So in Chicago, New York City, the two agencies with the most deaths of any department in this nation's history, a lot of officers out on the street, a lot of officers taking care of us, but a lot of officers putting themselves in peril.
Over the last year, there's been a national discussion underway about whether and when it is appropriate for officers to use force. And obviously here in Chicago, there's been a lot of attention paid to the number of police-involved shootings. Is this a good national discussion to be having? Is it a discussion you'd like to see go in another direction, or is it one that's just right?
Well, without question, I think we all realize that we can always improve. Law enforcement has evolved throughout history, has learned how to improve, how to do their job better, how to do it safer for themselves and for the citizens that they serve. I will give you a statistic, though, that I think puts things in a little different perspective. Of the 62 million contacts that officers across this country have every year with the citizens, they use or threaten the use of force less than 2% of the time. Most officers will go their entire career without ever firing their weapon in the line of duty. So I think we have to keep things in perspective. We have to realize that 62 million contacts is a lot. They're making a lot of arrests. I'll tell you another statistic. 57,000 officers a year are assaulted and attacked by criminals. So the officers are often at great risk, and sometimes, unfortunately, they do have to use force, but it doesn't doesn't happen very often.
It's when an officer does loses her life in the line of duty, what impact does it have on the community they serve, and what impact should it have on the community they serve?
Well, I think when there's an attack on an officer, certainly when an officer is killed, we all should feel the pain. That's attack against us, attack against society, attack against the freedoms and liberties that we so much cherish. And it's amazing to see what happens when an officer is killed in the line of duty. The outpouring of support from the public is truly amazing. Cars stopped on the side of a road as the hearse goes by, people with hands over their hearts. Unfortunately, and I've heard this from so many survivors, they say, wow, you know, they're saying such great things about my loved one who I lost. I wish they would have said those things when they were alive to hear it. And I think we all take our officers for granted until that deadly moment occurs, and then we realize the risk they're taking on our behalf. So, you know, this week especially, National Police Week, let's pause for a moment and maybe go up to that officer that you see on the street and thank them for being there. Thank them for keeping us and our children safe.
You know, and that was my next question too, Craig, is what can we do as citizens to make that more poignant week? Can we go up to an officer? Do we buy them a cup of coffee? What are the things that we can do to help?
Well, I think, number one, I'd love for people to visit our website, lawmemorial.org, and they will see some incredible stories about these men and women who serve, not only the ones who've died in the line of duty. We have a program called Officer of the Month, so we honor officers who are out there doing amazing things. And it's not just the courage, it's the compassion. These men and women are helping the homeless. They're helping the elderly when they need assistance. These people are out there every day doing things that we'll never see or hear. And that's one of the reasons we're building this museum. So go to lawmemorial.org. You can support the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. You can help build this National Law Enforcement Museum. But yes, I would certainly say if you see an officer this week or any time during the year, please go up and say thank you. They don't hear it nearly enough. And this week especially, officers deserve that thanks and appreciation.
Craig Floyd is the president and CEO of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. Craig, thanks for being with us on The Opening Bell.
My pleasure, Steve. Thank you.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN market desk this morning, Dow futures pointing higher. Dow futures up almost 100 this morning. S&P, NASDAQ futures also pointing higher. Let's get the latest on commodities now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, thank you very much. Good morning. Farmers made pretty good progress planting corn again last week. As of Sunday night, 64% of the nation's corn acres had been planted. And here in Illinois, 78% of the acres planted, while neighboring Indiana, only 38%. But in Iowa, 80% of the corn acres had been planted as of Sunday night. Wisconsin with 56%, and Michigan coming in with only 18%. Soybean planting, on the other hand, nationally, 23% of the acres planted. That's up from the average of 16% over the last 5 years. Well, the grain market gave back a lot of the gains of Friday yesterday as we saw the May wheat contract end down 6.25, May soybeans down 7.75, May corn took the heavy hit down 9 cents a bushel. But at the Mercantile Exchange, while hog futures traded lower, cattle continued their upward move. Make it 7 winning days in a row. June live cattle ending the day yesterday at $123.25, up $2.52, and the May feeder cattle contract up $3.42 at $150.80, and May hogs lost 70 cents a hundredweight. An important USDA report with stocks numbers due out this morning at 11 o'clock. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. It's 5:51, and hundreds of economists have urged world leaders today to end the era of tax havens. It's a letter coordinated by the activist group Oxfam. 300 economists say poorer countries are hit hardest by tax dodging. Let's get the latest on this now. ABC News correspondent Tom Rivers with us this morning from the Foreign Desk in London. Tom, what are they urging?
Well, they're saying, look, you and I can say tax havens are probably pretty bad for just about every country around the world, but when you have the likes of leading economists from Harvard, Oxford, the London School of Economics saying it, people kind of perk up their ears and say, yeah. They say the time is now to lift the veil of secrecy. Transparency is the real deal. And it all boils down into billions of dollars that is lost for things like education, fixing bridges, fixing roads, you name it. The super rich multinationals are not paying their fair share. It is becoming an increasingly unequal world, these economists say. And yes, something has to be done.
So are they saying then that these tax havens then take money away from countries that then have to pay for stuff themselves? Is that one of their main argument?
Exactly. They say, you know, it's hard to come up with a figure, but they say at least $170 billion is not available and should be available around the world for countries to deal with things like infrastructure. And, you know, that's money that is just lost from the system entirely. Interesting as well, next couple of days there's going to be an anti-corruption summit held here in London. We'll see. It's going to be kind of a beginning chapter, if you will, down the road of some kind of coordination internationally. 40 countries going to be sending representatives here. It'll be headed by Prime Minister Cameron. We find out last month that Cameron himself had something like $50,000 worth of money tucked away offshore as well. So it's pretty murky. It's pretty nasty in various countries around the world.
So what are the nuts and bolts of their suggestion or their recommendation here? Because I think most people would think that these tax havens are illegal already, but they're really not, are they?
They're not really. It's kind of that murky world of tax avoidance. And again, you look at the tax laws here in the UK, you look at them in the US, you know, instead of a book that's maybe a few hundred pages, it's thousands upon thousands of pages. And if you've got the right lawyers, if you've got the right bucks, they'll find a loophole for you somewhere and save you big bucks down the road.
Is there a part of the world where this is more prevalent than another, or is it pretty much spread across the world?
Yeah, it's spread across the world. See, it was under these Panama Papers when they came out. You name it. Some of the big money from the Middle East thrown overseas, Russia as well. Some big players in Russia. They're doing it. Americans as well. They're probably pretty nervous right now, worrying about their name showing up in this latest trove of information data coming forward. But yeah, you name it. Rich countries, poor countries, everybody's hiding the money, and it's actually hitting the poorest countries the worst because they desperately need the money the most.
And so would the World Bank or the International Monetary Fund oversee the banning of these tax havens? How would this work?
That's what they're trying to figure out this week. How do you possibly do this? You can put it into different names, et cetera, et cetera. And until the Panama Papers, people kind of figured, well, it's probably out there. It's very murky. How do you get to it? That's the real question. And it's interesting as well. A lot of the accounts in the Panama Papers came from British overseas territories. So that has to do with whatever persuasion and, if you will, arm twisting the Brits can do on former colonies to play ball.
This anti-corruption summit, what other things might they be talking about?
Well, again, it's got to do with the money that has been going overseas for a long, long period of time. And really it boils down, for instance, in this country, is it tax avoidance or is it, which is legal by definition, or is it illegal, if you will, hiding of funds that you should be paying, for instance, tax on? Now, there's countless examples in this country, multinationals, and it has to do with where their headquarters are here in the 28-nation European Union. But a lot of the countries that they do business in, they pay very little or no tax. So the CEOs are not paying anything. The janitors that work, though, in their large corporate headquarters probably pay more tax than they do.
Well, we'll certainly stay tuned for this as this summit gets underway in London. Tom Rivers from the Foreign Desk this morning, ABC News correspondent. You can follow Tom on Twitter at TomRiversABC. Tom, thanks for being with us this morning.
Take care.
It's 5:56 on the opening bell. That's our program for today, produced by Mary Sandberg. Production help from Bennett Wakenight. Engineer, as always, Ben Cortez.